This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 659, brought to you by Harry's. Go to Harry's.com/iFanboy to get $5 off a shave set while supplies last, the free shipping until December 12th. And Eero, never think about Wi-Fi again. Get $100 off the Eero base unit and two beacons package and 1 year of Eero Plus. Visit Eero.com/iFanboy and at checkout, enter iFanboy. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 659. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
Josh, that's my wrestler name. That's, yep. When I do the South American circuit, that's what they call me. Josh Flanagan.
We are a fanboy.
Whoever their Michael Buffer guy is, that's what he calls me.
One of us picks their favorite book, call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book and the other books from the week, the patron pick. Patron powers, if we have time, listener mail. It's fun. It's a fun, good time. I don't know what happened. I had some caffeinated tea before the show. That could be it.
It's almost like you know who Matt Berry is? There's a little bit of Matt Berry, the British sort of comic actor in there. He will stop sometimes and pause before going to the next issue. Go on.
Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers, although I can't really think of any this week. Oh, I guess there are.
Sure.
There always are. Exercise some caution. Use your brain. This week, Josh had the pick.
I did have the pick. It was not an easy pick. I always say that, and I don't mean to demean the book, but it was not like an obvious thing. I've been saying this a lot lately, I feel like, now that I think about it. Pick of the week is Farmhand number 5. And I think a lot of that has to do with sort of where we are in that story and how I, when sort of analyzing it after the fact, how I was kind of impressed at, I was quite impressed. It's sort of how the story has been laid out and the information, is being parsed out in such a way that is like, I want to know more. Very specifically, like, I want to know more about this family and what there's all these little pieces of things that happened in the past and why everybody's mad at everybody else and all these intricate soap opera like relationship problems that are going on in the background of this sci-fi body horror story, which is the same thing. It is also being done. It's written and drawn by Rob Guillory, but it looks like Rob Guillory's work, which is also. There's a contrast to it where, like, there's a drama here and there's a horror here that's happening, but he still does funny shit in the middle of it. Right. And it's such a weird mix. And I think it's taken me a little bit to I've enjoyed it all along, but it's taken me a little bit to sort of get into the flow of the thing and what it is. And I think that it's working. And I think with issue 5, what I felt was I was like, oh, this is really gelling into a thing. And this basically is the end of the first act. I think we're out until March, if I'm not wrong. So he can keep on schedule. You know, but I think a lot of things came together in this issue, and it sort of solidified the fact that I was like, I really do like this. Like, my first instinct when I read is, oh, I'm enjoying this, I'd like to know more. Through the middle, I was like, I'm not sure what this is going to be. And as we get to the end of 5, I just thought, you know, he's doing a really good job with this, juggling a lot of sort of disparate elements. I really think that the character drama, the family conflicts and things like that are very interesting, because it would be one thing to have characters who are mad at each other all the time and sort of interact while fighting, which is really an easier thing to do in a comic book. But this one actually has a thing where, like, the main character, who I want to call Rob because he looks like Rob and he's a stand-in for Rob, but, you know, the main character and his dad, like, they definitely have a conflict going on, but they still are interacting with each other all the time the way that families do.
Right.
And the same thing with the sister. You know, like, they care about each other and they're doing things out of duty and that you have to do for their family. But there are big problems between these people. And then in the background, you have this just this other weird science monster crap going on, which, you know, like, everybody came for the what is it called? The charcuterie? Is that what they call it? No, the boucherie. I'm using my different French words for food, where the whole town gets together and they roast a whole pig and everybody pays and they take some. And it's a really cool, real local thing that's like, oh, this is a thing that happens in this place. It doesn't happen where I live. So that's interesting. Also, it's a huge roasted pig. So you've got my attention.
Right. Deliciousness.
Right. And then, you know, it's boucherie. So, you know, like, oh, but that's going to be great. Like, and that's a thing that happens where they are, which I find interesting. Other places that are ostensibly in our culture, but that are, you know, slightly different. And then, you know, they open it up and inside's all green and weird from the weird science stuff. And, like, that's not good. There's a police chase. There's a procedural going. There's a lot happening here. And it's fairly well balanced, I think. I really enjoyed the issue. I liked a lot about it. I liked a lot of moments from it. And at the end, it left me with a lot of sort of questions. And I want to know what's going to happen next. And I don't get to know for quite a while.
Yes.
It's covering a lot of ground and doing it pretty well. And that's why we're here.
Yeah, I think it's good. I don't love it overall. I think we talked about this last issue. I find it maybe more interesting than good. And I find it more interesting to see Rob Guillory work through his first book like this, where he's writing and drawing a very intricate story. And he's getting better at it as it's going.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I love it. I don't even know if I really like it. I do like it, but I don't.
I understand where you're coming from completely.
There might be too much going on. He might have too many balls in the air. None of them have fallen, but it is hard to sort of grasp onto any one storyline because there's so many of them. I find the horror plant part probably the least interesting part.
I think I'd probably agree with you there. But I don't find it irritating. Like, when it shows up, I'm like, get on with it. There are other stories where that is happening. Where you can sort of get into part of it and then part of it you just don't care at all about. I want to know the background of this. Like, it kind of doesn't make sense, and I want to see if he can weave it together. And this guy who's in his overalls, who's also working in a big science factory, and there was a brain experiment that went wrong. And I don't know. There's a lot of things, and I kind of don't mind it. I kind of look at it like a soap opera or like overly over drama, you know, where it's just, wow, there's a ton happening. And I don't know that that's a problem. And really that's up to him to drop the ball or not.
Right. No, I think
it's tricky.
The character stuff is definitely really interesting. The family dynamics are really good.
Yeah. And I think
I'm finding the town more interesting because we're only 5 issues in, but we are learning a lot in these 5 issues. And so I have no doubt that in another 5 issues or so, it'll be that much more interesting, but I don't dislike it for sure. It's good.
Yeah, this isn't one of those, like, you know, I'm not going to make this the pick of the week and be like, this is the thing for everybody. Go pick it up now. Do not go pick this issue up now if you have not been reading it. But we do so many, you know, like, number one issues and sort of starts of storylines. And I think sometimes this week I was at a point where I was like, I really want to appreciate something that's, you know, in the middle of things that is going really well. And there's a place for that. So like this, you know, this is an ongoing thing. I could do this for any issue of Strangers in Paradise that's been coming out, something like that. But you know, in comparison to all the things that we've read, that we've been talking about, I think this was the one that I felt I appreciated the most this week. There were a lot of other things that came out that were good that we've definitely covered before. And we've said, oh, this was good. And it was good in the same way. There were no Bendis Superman books this week.
Weird. I would like to go back and look at Chu, because I'm curious to see how his art has evolved since then. Because I don't remember the lag time between the end of Chu and this book, we've had Rob Guillory art in our lives fairly regularly for like almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And
yeah, 2009.
And so he's definitely gotten better. I'm just curious. I'd be curious to go back and see how much better he's gotten.
Yeah, I bet a lot of that falls into sort of his efficiency. But I know that he's scripting this. Like he does a full script for himself beforehand. I think the production is probably better than Chu, certainly earlier on. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't know. I think the storytelling, I think there's some things that he's doing here that dynamically wouldn't have necessarily worked in Chu. Right. There's a bit where the lady is at the mayor's house and there's the trippy thing where the flower is coming out of her eye and it's a two-page spread.
Yep.
Like, I wouldn't see that in a Chu book. I don't think.
No, they're definitely different books. I like his art. I was just curious how, because it's just when it progresses that it's like aging. You look in the mirror every day. You don't really notice how old you're looking. But
you know, what is also interesting is that if you look through these books, like there's no, he doesn't cheat. Like he's got you know, backgrounds and he's got like a real sense of place. You look in the background of the boucherie, like there's a shitty shed and a truck and there's people standing around and there, you know, he's definitely creating a sense of place in all these things. There's a window in the lab. They're just not blank walls. Like he's really putting it into it.
He doesn't skimp. And it makes sense that he needs a couple months to load up some issues.
And he'd planned out all of this stuff ahead of time because he didn't want to promise and then not deliver. So whatever that takes, I'm fine with, as long as, you know, especially if people are upfront about it.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. I mean, these kind of books usually need that built in. They don't have the infrastructure that a Marvel or DC has to keep it going every other week or whatever that happens now.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
He's writing and drawing and doing the stuff. And
for the first time, I can imagine he learned a lot with this first arc.
Definitely. Definitely.
So the first big release this week was The Green Lantern, number one. Grant Morrison, Liam Sharp, Grant Morrison's return to the DC Universe. Creepy, quietly variant cover. This is my pick of the week.
I can see that. There was some reasons why it wasn't mine. I think was that as I went through it, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a hell of a lot more after Hal Jordan showed up.
Mm-hmm.
There was some bits at the beginning where it was like all the aliens talk stuff, and I hate that.
Yeah, you hate phonetic talking. I know.
I know, but it's also just like trying to come up with like the making up of a, and it's not even that it's bad. I just don't like it. But also, it reminds me of a different time and era of comic books. Like I feel like that was really common at a certain point. I was like, oh, this is like the British comic scene that he came from, you know.
Well, that's part of the reason why I love this. And we've talked before about Liam Sharp, who did
Wonder Woman
for a while with Rucka, and then he did that Batman Wonder Woman miniseries that he wrote and drew. And I haven't really connected with his art up until this point because he's just strange enough for this.
I see what you're saying. It's like the drawings are really strange, but the style is not. The style seems very straightforward, but then like
this is a strange Hal Jordan. Like there's a
Yes.
I'm looking at page 24. There's like a full page shot of him. And he's really long and lean, but super muscular at the same time. It looks like that era of comics you were just talking about.
Yes, it does.
I thought that really worked for the book. I thought it felt right.
I mean, there's some
really terrific stuff in here, but also some really weird stuff. And I mean, if you just go a couple pages next, page 27, where he's flying up to Oa or to New Oa, and that's a great shot of Hal Jordan. I think there's a lot of weirdness here, and I think that probably works for what Grant Morrison is trying to do, which is basically what we had been saying for years we wanted Hal Jordan to be, which was just space cop.
I did, by the end of this, I was like, oh, this is the space cop story, and they very much played it that way for a while. It was strange enough that I was like, which Grant Morrison are we going to get here?
Right.
And I don't know that that's a bad thing. I just wasn't willing to quite put my chips behind it yet in terms of saying this is your pick of the week.
Sure.
But by the end, I was like, all right, okay. This is like, it seems like if there's not a strong Green Lantern book, mm-hmm. like a Hal Jordan book, then there's not a strong sense of Hal Jordan anywhere.
Yeah, because he's not in the Justice League. So we obviously had two Green Lantern books previous to this. We had Green Lanterns, which was Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz, and then we had Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, which was everyone else. It was Hal Jordan and Kyle Rayner and Guy Gardner and John Stewart.
But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I sampled in both of those, but you know, neither of them, like the Hal Jordan book didn't stand out to me all that much.
No, they were solid. They were solid.
Yeah,
And then I guess in anticipation of this book, they sort of shuffled the creative teams plus the focus. So like, for instance, strangely, Hal Jordan became a star of the Green Lanterns book while he was also the star of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. And then it just sort of got less interesting. Dan Jurgens took over. It was fine. It was okay. But it didn't feel special. This feels special. And also what I liked about this book was it completely wiped the table of whatever they were doing before. I mean, like this, you could not really read this as the continuing chapter from what the previous stories. I mean, there's a new Oa.
I started it, I thought, have we gone back in time? Are we getting sort of some sort of an origin story? And then I realized, no, he's Green Lantern. He has been for a little while, but yeah. It was definitely, there was a very explicit recognition of Hal Jordan's past, insurance, toy salesman.
Yeah, oh yeah, they went through it all. It's still like the Grant Morrison who wrote the first half of Super Gods doing Green Lantern.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like he's probably really great for this type of property, which is very much silly Silver Age.
Yeah, yeah.
Space cop, wacky aliens.
I think if I had any, like, just because this is how it works, like I had a little trouble gaining my ground, knowing where I was in things, and I still don't quite know. I mean, this is clearly, it's a reboot. I'm cool with that. But are we in the DC universe proper? Or are we just...
Well, if you go to page 29, in which he's with one of the Guardians and they're talking about how the Book of Oa has been rewritten, I mean, that looks like a giant Dr. Manhattan symbol on the book.
Oh, yes, it does. Look at that. Oh, don't do that, Grant. Steer clear, buddy.
So, I mean, I would assume so. And also, if you look at the end, which was awesome, you know, coming soon in Green Lantern, there's a shot of him with current Green Arrow. So, I would assume it's right in there.
I guess, yeah.
DCU.
What's the, you know what I didn't know what to make of is the end bit.
I don't know what that is either.
Okay, and maybe I shouldn't, but the Weaponeer, he's in yellow. He's got cyborg.
It's the dude
eye.
From the Frank Quitely variant cover. I don't know what that means, but okay. I just think this. If you're going to give Grant Morrison a book and a property he hasn't really done anything with, it's this one. And he didn't. You know, when he did Justice League, it was Kyle Rayner as Green Lantern. It wasn't Hal Jordan. So let him do, you know, the alpha male of the Silver Age, which is an era he loves so much. I mean, that Hal Jordan in the beginning, who gets in the fight with the bums and beds ladies and talks about being a toy salesman. And that's Silver Age Hal Jordan right there.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think if he can sort of crystallize who the character is, I think that the benefits will be felt all over the other books too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm actually in on Liam Sharp for it right now. And I wasn't before, so we'll see how that goes.
I like the observation and the way that sort of you thought about it. I think that's valid. I don't love it.
No, it's definitely particular style that you don't normally like. And I don't normally like necessarily either, but I just think it feels very much like this is a 90s, in a good way, 90s.
Yeah, but you're right. There's a weirdness to it that I think, you know, at first blush, it's like this is like an Alan Davis kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like a straight up sort of, you know, or Dan Jurgens, or, you know, just like that guy, you know, this sort of does this sort of straight up figures. But then you really do get some creepy monsters here that is a different thing.
Yeah.
And you mix those two together, and that is not what I'm used to seeing. And that, you know, he drew some stuff here, man.
This style didn't work really with Wonder Woman, and it didn't work in the Wonder Woman Batman books for my eyes. But I think it really works here. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Cool.
He's the Green Lantern, so he's the main one.
Yeah, he is. That's true.
Well, I was thinking about that on Wednesday as I was looking. Like, when you hear the name Green Lantern, who do you think of?
I mean, Hal Jordan, but...
Right, because the other Green Lanterns are referred to by their names.
Yeah, yeah.
Kyle Rayner, you don't think of as Green Lantern. You think of as Kyle Rayner.
I did briefly flash to Alan Scott. I'm not going to lie. But
Guy Gardner is called Guy Gardner. Mm-hmm. You know, John Stewart is called John Stewart.
Yeah.
Because Hal Jordan is the Green Lantern.
Yeah. That's true.
Even Alan Scott after Hal Jordan became Alan Scott.
Yep, definitely.
And now I miss Justice Society.
It was a fine book, and there's a need for it.
I'm very curious what you thought of Death of the Inhumans.
I'm also very curious what I thought of Death of the Inhumans.
I was kind of bummed because it was much. We love Carrie. I was going to say Carrie Elwes. I don't know why. Donny Cates. Carrie Elwes didn't write this book.
As you wish.
I didn't feel like this stuck the landing like at all.
I wasn't entirely sure it was a landing. There's a bit. You know, I enjoyed. I enjoyed reading it. I enjoyed the bits. But. Yes, you're right. There's a bit where Black Bolt goes in and he shuts the door on them so that they can't come in because he's figured something out. And I read it three times and I'm not sure what he figured out.
No, because the opening of the book, and this is important, is how there was a prophecy. They go through the Midnight King prophecy again, which has been the whole impetus of this book, is that one of the Inhumans will destroy everyone. And Black Bolt, he knows the truth of the prophecy, right? Mm-hmm. And he has one more big scream in him before his voice is destroyed. And so the whole buildup is that he's going to do something really crazy that is both the prophecy and his final scream. And let's take an interlude to really appreciate the joke from Beta Ray Bill, who doesn't understand the sign language.
Yes.
That was a terrific double panel joke. What are we doing? And so you think...
I just looked at it again. I like that he whispers in, like he tries it with Karnak, doesn't get anything out of it, and then he turns to Medusa like, can you help?
Yeah, no, that was a great – I laughed out loud for a good minute. So he goes into the room with all the bad Kree, and as you said, shuts the door, and then he's at the return of the prophecy voiceover, and you think, oh, shit, something crazy is about to happen, and all he does is just kill all the Kree.
But he did kill, like, so as you go in there, though, so apparently he's using more his not screamy, but his, like, you know, specific. Is he using his big scream, or is he using his little tiny weaponized scream that he's been using?
No, it's the big one.
Okay. Well, as he goes in there and he looks at the Voxi.
Voxi.
You see, at least one of them is Triton.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So he's killing those guys. Now... good news is Lockjaw survived this story.
Lockjaw survived. Crystal survived. Yep. Medusa survived. I mean, everybody basically but Triton.
Right. And then whoever these other guys are supposed to be. And then the other thing I thought was that I thought Vox was a person. And then it turned out that Vox was just sort of, they make these Voxes out of the bodies basically of the Inhumans that they capture. But in the beginning, like, there's a Vox here. Is that Crystal?
Yes, in the beginning it's Crystal.
Okay.
At the end of the last issue, we saw her becoming a Vox. Mm-hmm.
So he killed some of the Inhumans?
But not the main ones. And, I mean, it's like it's the death of the Inhumans. There's one point where he said the Inhumans must die as he's doing the scream. And it just doesn't feel
and I like don't,
a weighty thing has happened.
Well, he walks out. They say it's over. She says your voice.
It's gone now.
I know, but I don't think they hammer that home enough.
Yeah, well, because you only
very
get two
subtle. Yeah, no, yeah.
Come into the room.
I mean, honestly, it's over. I feel like we got shorted an issue. I feel like this needed to be another issue.
Yeah. It just felt, after a very interesting and fun, we really enjoyed the first four issues miniseries that built up to this big moment. It felt like we didn't get enough of the moment and or the aftermath.
Yeah.
Like, what does this mean? What does this mean now? Are they putting them on the shelf again? Are they coming back?
Now he's depowered.
He's depowered. But all the main Inhumans are alive except for Triton.
And there might be another one out of those people that I'm not thinking of. But, yeah. This is a great cover. That drawing of Lockjaw on the ground is by Kari Andrews. It's fantastic.
It was a weird ending.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed. I was really looking forward. I thought, you know, the final issue of this great miniseries we really liked, and it's going to be, you know, up there. But it didn't work for me.
I don't think I was that far along, but it was a little baffling. Also, I don't like this Karnak. I want them to make him weird and Kirby again with a big head. Not this.
You don't like Warren Ellis Karnak?
I did like that story an awful lot, and I liked that in that context. But if we're back to here, I don't want it. I want him to just look like
a weird maybe put him on the shelf for a year.
Yep, that's fine.
The TV show was a bust. You know, let's just put him back on the shelf. The X-Men are back. Are you still reading Nightwing?
You know, I kind of forgot that I made the 50 pick of the week, and then I saw that 52 had come out, and I was like, I missed 51. And I feel like that was about a week ago, but whatever. Then I was like, all right, maybe I'll read it, and I saw Scott Lobdell, and I said, Connor will let me know.
I actually didn't. I didn't dislike this. I remember we talked about. Oh no, maybe you were out on the show when we talked about 51. Maybe that was Paul. In 51, Rick burns his headquarters, and a weirdo cop finds the burned out headquarters and puts on the Nightwing suit at the end. So in this issue, there's two things going on. One, at the end of the last issue, somebody tried to mug Rick, and he went into Nightwing mode and beat him up really bad, sort of unconsciously. And so in this issue, he's dealing with the fallout of, oh my God, I know I was a superhero. I don't really like it, but inside me there's this sort of, you know, automatic response thing. Mm-hmm. So he's a little freaked out. Although it's fun, he's a little freaked out. And then in the other sort of storyline is this cop is calling together his three most trustworthy friends, two of whom are cops, one's a fireman, to become the Nightwings. They're going to wear all of his old costumes and fight crime. And it's kind of stupid, but, I mean, if we're going to go for it, let's go for it.
So
I also just really like Chris Mooneyham's art a lot.
Yeah, no, that's completely valid. So, here, like, if he's had a personality switch where he's not Dick Grayson.
He's Rick.
In fact,
there is a dialogue. I'm Rick Grayson now. Not even with a K. R-I-C.
Oh, fuck that. Like Rick Oley.
At least give him the K.
The whole planet is a city.
Can a brother get a K?
I mean, no. But like, okay, so if he's lost that thing and he doesn't like being a superhero, that is 180 degrees from the one guy who loves being a superhero.
Yeah. And
that's problematic to me.
He recognizes there's fun in being able to jump from the rooftop onto his cab, which he does here like a aerialist, but he's a little scared of what's inside of him only because he doesn't consider himself someone who can really destroy someone with his fists. You know what I mean? And that's sort of interesting.
Like, yes.
You know, what is this like? It's sort of like the Jason Bourne thing. You know, he wakes up on a bench. He can destroy that cop. And he doesn't really understand why. And that's kind of what we got. We basically have Jason Bourne here.
It's true. But what I feel like what happens is the second that he starts to realize, like, if he says I'm enjoying this or something, like, that's when I feel like, I don't know. I'm rewriting. I didn't even read it. But like, it's the essence of his character is that he's the one who has fun doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not realizing that, not doing it, then what's the point of it? Like, are you just going to go back to it? He's...
Well, the really weird thing here is, and I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing, is so when Peter Parker was taken over by Dr. Octopus, that was fine because at the end of the day he was going to be back as Spider-Man. And any of these stories, when the main hero is taken over by someone else, that you know that at the end of the day the story is how does he get back to where he was. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen with Nightwing because I know there is a hit out on him from the upper echelon of DC.
Mm-hmm.
So that is kind of exciting, even if I don't like it, because I don't know that it's going to return to status quo at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. This whole book could wrap up in five issues. We never see Rick again.
I mean, you know it will happen. You just don't know when that end actually will be and what regime will be in charge of it.
I might be 65 years old when they finally get someone new in charge of DC and gets to be Nightwing again. Or, you know, hey, I'm Dick Grayson. I don't know. So that is kind of exciting, only in the fact that, you know, when everybody freaked out about Superior Spider-Man, I was the one being like, just chill out and this is going to end and he's going to be back. I don't know that I can say that about Nightwing.
So I think you can. I think it's just close to home for you. And what's funny is, though, is you're actually experiencing it the way that you're supposed to experience it. This is the point, is to feel like that.
Right. The Mooneyham art is really terrific.
Mm-hmm.
He has a Romita Jr. thing going on, but a more fluid.
Nice.
Romita Jr., which I really like a lot. Let's take a quick break and talk about Harry's. It's the holiday time, as much as you don't want it to be. I see holiday stuff everywhere, Josh. I don't know about where you are, but they're selling Christmas trees at the local gardening place near my office.
Sure.
And I just feel like that's too soon. Your tree's going to be dead by the time Christmas runs around. But let's not talk about trees. So guys can be hard to shop for. I know that. I've got a lot of men in my life who I see a couple times a year, family members mostly, and it's, you know, I don't know what they're into. I don't know what gadgets they've got. But it's really simple to get them a shaving set. And Harry's is the perfect gift for that. I've actually used Harry's in the last two previous Christmases to give out as gifts. Maybe even three, actually, now that I think about it.
Who's left for you to give Harry's to then?
Well, I still have a couple. My brother got one 3 years ago. My father-in-law got one. My sister-in-law's boyfriend got one. So I still have a couple I can give out to people.
Okay.
It's a perfect gift because you get the entire shaving set. You know, you get everything you need in one box. It's not just like, oh, hey, I was in the airport and I got you this thing. This is like a nice
mm-hmm.
gift set you can get when you get from Harry's.
And you can be like, I use this and I love it.
Right. And I can talk it up. And also, as we're going to discuss in a minute, you can get it engraved to make it even more special.
Nice.
So it really is the perfect holiday gift if you're having trouble with that man in your life who you don't know what they want. Give him a shave set. Almost every man needs to shave,
mm-hmm.
and it's a good set for that. So let's talk about Harry's. Harry's has a 4.5 out of 5-star rating on Trustpilot, which is great. And they have got the German engineered blades for as low as $2 each. It's a practical gift that everyone will use who gets it. Everyone needs to shave. It'll save him money on blade refills if they decide to go that way. You can definitely talk up that point. That's a big selling point. And you can, as I said, you can personalize it to make it feel special. You can get the handle engraved, which is nice. You get three letters. You can do the classic initials, or if you've got a three-lettered male friend, you can give them just their name. It's nice.
R-I-C.
R-I-C, exactly. You get it for Rick Grayson. There's a whole bunch of colors you can choose that you can if you know they're into the color green, you can get them a green one. I have an orange one myself. And they have limited edition holiday handles, so you can give a special, you know, limited edition. Everyone loves limited edition stuff. They love feeling special. Personal engraving options, ready to gift. It comes in a handsome gift box. I can attest to this. And a gift set starts at just $10 and is 100% quality guarantee. And if you don't love it, he can return it and it's hassle-free, which is great because sometimes you have to return a gift. You know, it's unfortunate, but sometimes it happens. So here's a special offer for fans of our show. We've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set. If they start at $10, that's quite a hefty discount, including the limited edition holiday set when you go to harrys.com/ifanboy. Plus, you'll get free shipping. This offer is for new and returning customers. It's only available for the holidays. So if you've already gotten a Harry's set through us, You can also take part in this giveaway as well. Each Harry's shaving set comes with an ergonomic weighted handle with an option to engrave, and German-engineered five-blade cartridges that provide a close, comfortable shave, foaming shave gel for a rich lather, a travel cover to protect your blades, and a handsome holiday gift box. What more could you like? Or you just want something for yourself? You can redeem the Harry's trial offer to experience a quality shave before committing to getting that for your man in your life. So that seems like a great deal to me. So here's what you do. Get all your holiday shopping done super early. Get rid of the stress. Don't worry about it. Free shipping ends on December 12th, so you should act now. Only a couple of weeks. Go to harrys.com/ifanboy to get $5 off a shave set while supplies last. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. And if the shave set started at 10 bucks, you really can't go wrong here. Let's talk about Batman 58 from Tom King and Michael Janin. I was not thrilled to see Bane. I had forgotten about that storyline. It was one of my least favorite storylines on this run, but I actually did like this issue.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of forgot that was a thing, and I was like, all right, this is the overarching bit. The whole story, actually. I really liked the – has it been everything since the beginning?
Almost. But I think once he started the mythology of his run, it was pretty early on that he fought Bane. We didn't like it. It was – But then I guess the whole point is that he somehow caused their breakup. So this has all been Bane.
That's right. Yeah. You know what's interesting is this is issue 58. You know, this is the equivalent to what we would have called a 5-year run, which is a fairly significant mark on a character, on something for me that's still, like, if you were to ask me, feels new.
Well, yeah, because it's been like 2 years.
I know, but even that's a long time. So that's interesting to me. Now I don't know much about I don't feel like I know much about Penguin one way or the other. So the person who was killed, was that his daughter or his wife?
I think it's his wife. I don't remember that character.
Okay. Either way, I really liked the sequence of, all right, bring me a top hat, a tuxedo, and an umbrella, fights Batman, gets checked into Arkham. Like, that's what he has to do to go take a meeting.
Right.
Which I thought that was a really fun sequence. And he could have made that last for like half the issue. I would have been fine, but he did in 3 pages.
Yeah, that was a really smart sequence. So Penguin has to go meet Bane. So he fights Batman, gets thrown in Arkham. Mm-hmm. Bane gives him some orders because Bane's running everything, I guess, secretly. But I like that the swerve that Penguin does not follow the orders.
I think that was a big swerve because I was like, please don't do the Alfred thing again.
I was like, so the whole thing is Bane wants Penguin to kill Alfred. And I was like, hasn't the poor man suffered enough? He didn't have a hand for like 2 years.
We're not talking about that.
So the plan was they throw a dead bird through the window, which causes him to clean up. They're going to shoot him in the head. Don't you feel like he would have like really strong or bulletproof glass everywhere?
I do. And I also feel like he would have excellent instincts. Alfred himself.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like the house is a bit more impenetrable than just being able to throw a bird.
Yeah, and he'd have like they'd have radar that there's a helicopter in their airspace, or that somebody had gotten close enough to throw a bird into it. You've got Alfred, who moments ago was cleaning a Tyrannosaurus tooth while hanging from the ceiling upside down in a huge cave. You know, he's not an incapable person.
No.
But
I'm glad they didn't shoot him, and I'm glad that there was a swerve. That was interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Penguin swerve on the last page really made the issue work, I think.
I also like that despite Commissioner Gordon's best efforts, not even Batman will talk about how dumb it is with Nightwing right now.
No. Why would – no, don't. No, so no need to.
Are you reading the United States versus Murder, Inc.?
I am. I happened to notice that I didn't grab this at the last second, and then I read it quickly, but I did feel as if I hadn't been reading it.
So the reason why I want to talk about it is because they haven't done a really good job of explaining that this is the second volume. There was apparently a first volume of this, which I ordered online on a trade and read it a couple of months ago. And I feel like if you haven't read that volume, there's just no idea what's going on in this book. But I could be wrong.
I mean, I had no idea what was going on in this book.
Okay.
This is the one where the first two issues, I thought they were fairly straightforward and new. It was the girl and her dad her uncle's the hitman because her parents are killed, and she's trained to be a hitman, and then she has to kill him, and that's how he wants it. And I was like, all right, I know this story. And then this story, I was like, what is this? I was very lost.
This is the issue that's tied in the most to what's happened in the past, which is the big war between the five families and the government, as the title of the book suggests. It just seems odd to me that they don't call this volume two, that they don't really let you know. But yeah, there's a whole backstory here that they're playing on that happened in the previous volume, and I can't imagine this was very comforting to new readers, this issue, as the government takes it up a notch and blows up the five families with a drone.
I mean, it's a valid thing. It's no different than what they're doing in Scarlet, which I think I did actually read. I wasn't going to, and then I did. But the way that this was sold, I was like, it was a new issue or a new series, and I was down with it. I was like, all right, cool, let's go with this. And I was very thrown off on this.
Yeah. Well, there is another volume if you're interested. It was good.
I don't know if I am now.
So I don't know how we missed a Bendis Michael Avon Oeming book.
I have no recollection of that. I remember Genius, the thing that he did with Bagley.
Right.
And I think he did. Was it only
two
one?
Issues? I think it was two issues.
It was not a lot, but it doesn't matter because I didn't really want it. I don't. Yeah, you're right. I have no recollection of this at all.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I don't know when it came out, but I guess they're assuming that if you're reading these, you've read all of, like, the same thing with Scarlet, if it's a continuation. But
which is valid, but also I think, like, it's sort of, you know, like he'd rebooted Powers a few times, and when he would come back to it, like when he brought Powers to Icon, you could have jumped on there. And so that's right. That's what this felt like. I wouldn't have known the difference. For two issues, I was in. And then third issue, I was, what the fuck? I was genuinely thrown because I was like, I've seen this. I know I've read these issues. It's only three, so I haven't missed one. And what is happening? Yeah. I didn't even know who anyone was.
Yeah, that was tough. This was the one that was really tight. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
You think they would reprint it, though?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know how long ago it was. I don't know how many issues it was. I don't know who published it.
I think it was six, and I believe, you know, it was published under Icon.
Okay. Whatever.
It felt like a six-issue trade from the heft of it. But what is The Outer Darkness, number one?
This is John Layman's new series from Image. It is a space sci-fi kind of Star Trek. There's a ship. There's some folks on it. There are aliens. It's got its own sort of set of politics and, you know, dangers and stuff like that. And I did not expect it. I did not know what it was going to be. Most of the crew seems to be black. The big boss man, or there's some sort of, you know, like a shady contact is an Indian. There's a lot of Indian Hindu kind of folks. There's aliens. The ship, he gets, like, basically, like, there's this captain, and he's, you know, he's like Kirk. He skirts the rules, but he gets the job done, and then they forces them to give him a ship at the end, and he gets his old ship back. And you know, he plays tough to get his ship back, and then he's walking on and all the new people are disrespectful to him, and then they find out he's the captain, so they do, and then he finds out that his ship has been fitted with a god engine. I think a god engine. And he goes into the engine room, and it's like a demon in a big jar who powers the ship, and they have to feed it with a sacrifice. So they bring it some criminals, and the ship eats the criminals. And then they go into warp mode. Like, it's a weird Star Trek spin-off-y hybrid thing.
Well, I like the art. It's who's it?
Afu Chan.
Chan. I like the art.
Yep. I think the art works really well. It's kind of it's got kind of a production technique to it that makes it look sort of old and faded as I'm reading it on an iPad.
I'm going to download it right now.
Yeah. And I enjoyed it. I did, you know, like, it's like a thing. I didn't expect it. And this context, like, you know, this gets done on TV a lot, and it's done in parody a lot, but I was like, this is just a straight ahead, like, space mission Star Trek kind of deal. And I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. I hadn't thought of that in a little while. And in that context, you know, the supernatural or the space, you know, that all works for me in there, as opposed to, like, with other books where it feels like it's shoehorned in. Like, I was like, oh, it fits here. It's fine. I liked it. So, I liked it a lot better than his other book, which also came out this week, Godzilla one. Leviathan, yeah.
I decided not to continue with it.
I don't think I did either.
Speaking of shoehorning into something, the Immortal Hulk number 8, in which a person is stuffed inside the Hulk, What did you think of this one?
I love this book. I just like that it makes no sense. It messes with all of my expectations, and it keeps me surprised and interested the whole time. I don't have a lot of expectations for what the Hulk is. I'm not super committed to the character. Hulk would do this, Hulk would not do that, blah, blah, blah. And so for me, it's just watching somebody kind of stretch out and do things that I don't know what they're going to do. So it's sort of that, you know, it brings back that mystery. Like, I don't know what this book is going to do, and I enjoy that.
So, Strange Science aside, so as we talked about last issue, the Hulk was captured, and they cut his body up into many parts, yes, and stuffed him into jars so he couldn't reform, which I guess is a thing the Hulk does. I wasn't aware. He manages to escape here, and in the course of reforming, he reforms around the sadistic doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's inside the Hulk. At the end, when he goes back to being Banner in a weird, very weird, creepy transformational way, which is also un-Hulk-like, Banner says, when he emerged, he felt queasy, infected. There was a terrible certainty in his gut that a long-held line had been crossed. The Hulk had taken a life. The Hulk's taken a lot of lives. That's what the Hulk does.
I don't think you're wrong, but also I don't care, because I was like, okay, if you're setting this up as the reality of this thing, then I'm going to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I decided to go with it. I had the same thought for sure. But I thought that if you're doing this Hulk story within the horror context, basically, which is what's been happening, like, this all worked. This was, you know, John Carpenter, you know, the thing, weird, creepy, you know, and the Hulk is what it is. The Hulk, this personality that they've given the Hulk in this is super creepy. I think it works.
All right. I'm still on, but with my fingertips.
Okay. I mean, listen, at a certain point, I'll be like, okay, that's enough of it. But for now, I'm enjoying it. And I think that, I don't know, the whole thing is just odd enough. Like, the artist is kind of an artist that I wouldn't really pick for this. But he's doing it. Like, I think it works.
Joe Bennett,
Yeah, it all kind of works. There's an inker and, I mean, like, it's just like, it's a lot of weird things. And it's a writer who I've seen around a lot but never really connected with. I feel like they're just kind of letting them do their thing, and there's a vibrancy to that, I think.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. If you go to ifanboy.com, you'll find the post for this show. You can talk about the books you read as well. But the patrons have their say. Every week at patreon.com/ifanboy, everybody who signs up to support the show gets to vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, the heavy favorite, Marvel Knights 20th Anniversary Special Number 1, written by Donny Cates, art by Travel Foreman, inks by Derek Friedolf, colors by Matt Mila, letters Corey Pettit. And when I saw this on the list, I was like, oh, am I going to read that? And then I thought, well, number one, it's Donny Cates. Number two, I mean, Marvel Knights is one of the most important things that's happened in comics in our lifetimes. And it brought us back to Marvel. And sure, I'll read it.
Sure.
And the art aside, which we'll get to in a second, mm-hmm, I actually really liked the story. I thought if you told me this was the first issue of a new Marvel event, I would say this is the best opening to a Marvel event that I've read in a while. It's not a Marvel event. I'm just saying if you told me that's what it was,
right,
I would totally be down for it. Whereas Matt Murdock, who doesn't remember who he is, and everybody is familiar yet different. Frank Castle's a cop, and Bullseye's there. Everything is just slightly changed. Someone has fussed with the reality, and I thought that was really compelling way to go through and sort of run into all these characters who were a big part of Marvel Knights back in the early 2000s.
So I have some comments.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to add something to the list.
Okay. What? Oh.
The list. So I need whoever out there is keeping track of this kind of thing.
Right.
So I'm reading the digital comic. I'm going through it. I get it. I'm not going to say this made a huge impact on me. I read it before I knew it was the pick of the week. Or not the pick, of the patron pick.
Patron pick, yeah.
And I, you know, like, I was like, I don't know. It's an alternate sort of thing. He knows who he is, but nobody else does, and everything's a little weird. Fine, but I've seen it. There wasn't a whole lot that was making me super interested in it. And then I get to page 24. Okay. I'm not paying attention to how long it is. Mm-hmm. I'm here. Karen Page, flip, two-page spread, big logo, says Marvel Knights, there's all the credits. I stopped reading there.
That's your thing that you keep doing. You have to scroll to the end of the book always.
I don't think to do it. This is the problem with digital. Okay, that's fine. The point being, that's not the thing I hate. I can take credit or blame for that or whatever. But motherfuckers need to put the credits in a place and stick with it. I have to do the scripts for this show, and I have to put the credits on the script, and I never know where it is. And it's driving me insane. The Green Lantern book, it was halfway through the book. Most of the Marvel books, they put at the beginning. Sometimes they put at the end.
I'm fine with it. This has served as sort of the post-credits, you know,
I don't
break.
Want that. I just get it out of the way. Don't use the credits as a dramatic moment. Be better than that. I don't like it.
You just don't ever go all the way to the end. I always go all the way to the end. You never know what you're going to miss.
I'm moving, man. I got to see what... I mean, I get it. And then at the end, like, I just read it now because it wasn't that much to it. Kingpin doesn't know who Daredevil is. And then Doctor Doom shows up with Taskmaster and Crossbones. Great.
What happened to the art?
Well, he's got an inker.
Right, and that was not a good thing.
I think that had a lot to do with it. I thought it was a... You know what's funny is that I thought that the Travel Foreman art was more... it was like they had mainstreamed it. Like, it just was like... more palatable than I guess his normal stuff.
They took all the personality out of it.
A lot of it, yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of times where it shines through. I think it was there in the Karen sequence. But, I mean, I was really excited when I saw Travel Foreman's name on it, and I felt like they just sort of... Who was the inker on Kirby?
Vince Coletta?
Who erased all his lines. Vince Coletta. They Vince Coletta'd it.
I don't think the color worked.
Yeah.
For this, it has that weird...
Maybe they were going for a retro early 2000s Marvel.
Yeah, that's what it had, that weird waxy, rubbery...
Maybe that's what they were doing.
On a lot of it.
The color back then was terrible for Marvel. They hadn't figured out digital coloring yet.
Yeah, and there's bits where... if you look in the office, say page 17, you can see Travel Foreman there, but like it just flattened him out. Everything.
Yeah, I was really disappointed in the way it looked.
Yeah, it was not great. And I really like Travel Foreman, but it's almost like the edges were rounded off. But then there's bits of it that are great. There's a sort of a collage-y thing on page 10 where it's in the target and you see his radar things and you see all the stuff going on. And there's a painting part in there where, you know, a lot of cool things there. But then other parts that were not cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird, weird book. And I guess it's... I mean, obviously, it's not just a one issue, even though it's called Special, but I'm not sure what to do. So let's do ratings on it.
Ratings.
Ratings out of 5, and I'm gonna give it a 3, even though I enjoyed it, because, I mean, 3 is okay. It's an enjoyable rating, but it would have been higher had the art been actual Travel Foreman and not Travel Foreman with the personality removed.
I would say that the art didn't bother me so much as I noticed it. Like examining it now and looking at it, I was like, that's not really event book status, but I don't know that that's what it's supposed to be. What I still don't know, I guess, I don't think the story was particularly something I hadn't seen before. It was a little, you know, like a Twilight Zone-y kind of thing. Nobody knows who Daredevil is, but they kind of do, and all the people are there. But really nothing sort of new to that. But also, what does that have to do with Marvel Knights? And also, what even is Marvel Knights now, if I'm being honest?
Well, it's just a tribute, so it's going to be... There'll be probably all the major characters from those books, which is Daredevil and...
So is this Marvel Knights? Is this, like, Ultimate Spider-Man?
It's just a tribute. It's a 20th anniversary tribute. So
and then that changed. Like, yeah, Marvel Knights changed what it was. For a while, Marvel Knights stuff was like... No, those were Ultimate books. I'm getting it mixed up.
Yeah. No, it'll just be Punisher and Daredevil and, you know, maybe Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
It'll just be a little one miniseries tribute.
Remember when they made the Punisher into an anime angel?
Yeah, I didn't read that.
Yeah, this is a good call.
So are you going to stick with the rest of this miniseries?
I might.
Did you give it a rating?
3.
3, all right. Yeah, I think I will.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, Dr. Doom and Taskmaster.
There's a lot to like. It's just that there wasn't a lot that felt special. That's what I'm...
That's 100% accurate.
You know what? It does feel a little bit special.
What's that?
That's my Eero router system that I've got here. The way that this works is we're all in different spaces, and most of us have been getting by with a single router. And you know the deal is that you know, oh, it works good. Don't go in that room. Doesn't work in that room. Doesn't work in that bathroom. You can't get anything to go in there. And if there was anywhere that the Wi-Fi needs to work. Anyway, the single router model doesn't work for our high bandwidth world. Everything you're doing all the time now is connected, and you want that to be on there. It's simple physics. So if your Wi-Fi waves don't go through walls, and just, you know, it's like asking a light bulb that's in your living room to light up your master bedroom. So what you need is a distributed system. And this is what offices have had for years, and it's always been very expensive and sort of difficult to do in a home system. But with Eero, you can install enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system in your home in just a few minutes. You download the Eero app on your iOS or Android device. It'll walk through each step of the process. It is quick, easy, and painless. And I have done this, and it really is easy because I have installed a lot of routers in my days. And this was the sort of simplest. And I was like, oh, that is much nicer than how I've been doing it for a very long time. You know, Wi-Fi routers is currently very tough to manage and optimize. If you ever go into the the admin page for your router.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for years, that's where our former host of the show, Ron, would get a call from us. Like, what am I supposed to set this at? Oh, you set the DNS filter to do. I'm like, God, dude, slow it up. It's really taken the Wi-Fi thing and moved it into more of a consumer product kind of thing. Still works really well, but sort of in terms of interface, you don't have to have an IT degree to be able to handle it. The Eero app lets you manage your network from the palm of your hand. You're going to know how many devices are connected at all times, as well as the internet speed, which is my favorite part of the app. I'm looking, I'm like, oh, I'm getting 256 down. That's awesome. And I can see like which point my phone is connected to and what things are connected to those things really easily and quickly. It's state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption because it controls the hardware and the software for your whole network and makes sure they're always secure. Traditional routers don't push software updates to their customers, so they're left vulnerable. So basically, you have to remember to go into your admin setting and it says, oh, there's a new firmware. You go, oh, Eero does that stuff and it lets you know that it's going on. It's done a couple of updates. They were pretty flawless for me. There is great customer support, which is really a thing that if you read reviews on the company, you'll see it's they've really invested in it. You can call and get a hold of a Wi-Fi expert within 30 seconds. If you have any problems with your connected devices or any of the stuff, the experts at Eero will walk you through it. And if you're not sure what it is the system would be best for you, you can also call them and talk about it. So, like I said, I've been using it now since whenever the last time they sponsored the show, I've been using it and I've been on there since then. I've had a great experience. It has increased the range within my home. I have a big old house and who knows what sort of lead is lining the walls. But I have, I have a point upstairs. I have a point downstairs. It works better in the corners of the house where it didn't before. And it's very steady. I haven't had dropping. It's been a really good experience for me. And like I said, the interface really is incredibly usable and kind of cool. I like to check it out and sort of see, like, oh, it's all working. That's good. Anyway, like I was saying, I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of things to it that I feel like I want to get into going into detail. I'm like, pull back, Josh. But it really is simple. I set it up within a few minutes, like a couple of months ago and haven't had to do a thing. You can never think about Wi-Fi again. That's the deal. You want to get, which is exactly what I'm saying. You can get $100 off the Eero base unit and two beacons package. So the base unit basically functions as your main router. And then the beacons are sort of to extend the signal to other parts of your house. 1 year of Eero Plus is included with that, which is sort of their, hyper security program and that. You can go to Eero.com/iFanboy and check out using the code iFanboy. When you do that, it's $100 off the base unit and two beacons package. It's very nice. The whole experience and packaging is super cool, and I was really glad to be on that. So thank you.
So you can podcast from anywhere in your house.
I am doing so as we speak.
All right. Well, thanks to Eero. But let's talk about some more patrons. Every week at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can help the show out. We do appreciate that. We have our stretch goals we're trying to hit, and we're getting closer every day. In addition to the voting on the patron pick, as you give it the $5 higher level, you get to have your very own patron superpower given to you. Sometimes it's dumb. Sometimes it's not so dumb. We'll find out live on the show.
We're going to find out right now. Ryan Tardiff has the power to cause spontaneous laughter in anyone he chooses.
So he like zaps you and you start laughing.
Yeah. Or almost think of it like the Purple Man.
Mm.
He wants you to start laughing. You can just start laughing. That's all he can do. Can't change your mind. Can't make you do something you don't want to do.
Right.
He just make you laugh. Now he could say a joke and then cause you to laugh.
And you would think that that was because the joke was really funny. You could just start getting the giggles. Right. He causes spontaneous laughter, though, in whoever he chooses. Humans. Can't make dogs laugh.
Can't make dogs laugh? Nope. All right. What about hyenas?
I mean, not any more than they normally would.
I see. Okay. Aaron Turner can emit a sauna-like steam from his body.
Hmm.
So he...
nothing else. You're keeping your clothes clean. Unless it's suede. I mean, and then don't wear suede, Aaron.
Keeps them pressed, mm-hmm. for sure. But he, you know, if you were in a room with him and you really wanted to, he could turn the room into a steam room. You could get your pores nice and open.
That's nice.
And if you sprayed him with a eucalyptus spray, you'd all have a nice thing going.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very nice.
He can also, you know, steam can also be used for subterfuge.
Okay.
So there's a lot of opportunities for Aaron Turner here, but he has terrific skin as a result of
it. I'm sure. Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah. And if he had a beard, for example, that would also be soft and lustrous.
It's nice.
It is nice. I like that idea. Rigo Nurse raps everything, and he does it really well.
He speaks in raps?
Yeah, he speaks. Everything he says is in raps, so it rhymes. There's a meter to it. There's a definite flow. But that's how it all comes out. As if he was in an early 90s Baz Luhrmann film. I don't know if that was a thing that was actually done in that, but I picture it that way.
So like Romeo and Juliet?
Yeah, yeah. Do they rap in that or do they just sing?
I don't remember.
Okay.
It's been like how many years since that movie
came out? There was definitely some rapping in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a better example of some sort of... I bet there's a really bad movie where they're like, no, it'll be teenagers, but everything they say is rap. It's a rap opera. It's terrible. But when Rigo does it, much better than that. It's really good. It's just like, wow, that's an impressive bit of rhyming there.
Could he win a Grammy?
Oh, yeah, easily. I mean, you know, talent is subjective, but it's objectively good.
Matt Wiggins, through the art of touch, can optimize any electronics. So, you know, he could touch your TV and the settings would all be to their optimal settings. No more image smoothing for you, old man TV or Ron's TV. If he touched your computer, it would, you know, clear out all old files and make sure everything's up to date. But it would happen at a touch, so it's all automatic.
Tell you what, that guy doesn't need to go anywhere near my Eero. It's all no, good.
Exactly. But he could optimize everything.
I like
electronic.
That.
Yeah. It's at its peak settings and peak performance.
So according to that, like you'd hand Matt your phone and you'd be like, I guess it did make sense to put everything on iCloud instead of local backup. Because exactly. I never quite know.
Right. If that's what's best for the device, mm-hmm. he will optimize it.
Yeah. I did go to a full iCloud system.
He lives in a world where he doesn't understand anyone's problems with technology. So everything works really great. I don't understand.
Does he not understand the specifics of it? Because that would be the best part.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. He just says,
hey, what is this here that you set up? I don't know.
Works better, though, doesn't it? Yes.
That's great.
Shall we do an email?
Sure. But if you wanted to get one of those powers, make sure you get over to patreon.com/ifanboy at $5 or higher. And we thank everybody who supports us for that. Now let us email. Andrew from Barcelona says, I'm in crisis. I've never read any of the DC Crisis events, and I've always wanted to. Which Crisis events and or tie-ins would you recommend I read, and which are your favorites? I've been thinking about doing this for years. I like that. And I hope to find the time during this holiday season. Thanks for the suggestions. Didn't we try to find Andrew a comic shop, or was that a different Barcelonan?
Maybe, but okay. What are the odds of two... Barcelona and Andrews listening to our show.
It's a major metropolitan city.
That's true. So I'm doing a cursory check of our YouTube page, and I don't see the Crisis show we did, which means it was one of those shows that got axed by Discovery. So that's not going to help.
You'll have to call on your innate knowledge of crises.
We did a whole half hour on all the DC Crisis stories, but that's no longer on the internet. So never mind. Which ones should you read? Well, I mean, if you really wanted to go into Crisis, you should read the one that started it all, Crisis on Infinite Earths. Now, it is a book written in the 80s, so it's going to read very differently than comics now, and I don't know if you're someone who's into that or capable of enjoying that, but that's, if you're going to do it, you need to read the granddaddy of them all, and do that. Read Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I mean, I like almost all of them. All the ones called Crisis. Zero Hour sucks. Don't read Zero Hour. Infinite Crisis a whole lot. I think that's a really great one. You can definitely pick it up and read it on its own. I love Final Crisis. I even love an Identity Crisis, which is not a crisis book, even though it's called, has crisis in the name. I recommend all of them. Just get the collections of Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis and Final Crisis. Those, that's sort of like the Crisis trilogy. If you read those three.
Do you think – I'm trying to – like I feel like you could go and read Crisis on Infinite Earths without much context. If you can, if you're okay being a little comfortable with just sort of piecing it together. I'm wondering how much the other two, like Final Crisis, were tied into what was going on at the time.
The first one for sure, because it was written in the time when I just turned my phone on. It was written in a time when – you know, they gave you all the information on the page. So when I was a kid, I read it piecemeal. I read whatever issue I could find in a comic store. So right. I didn't even read it. I didn't even read it linearly. And it's fine. If a 10-year-old can do that, then so can you as an adult. But Infinite Crisis, as I recall from having read it however many years ago we did that show, as long as you have a knowledge of the DC Universe, then I think you're fine. And I think that's true for all these books at the end of the day. As long as you know the characters, you may not get all of the things, all the references and all the things that are happening. But, you know, they're supposedly written for a wider audience, right? They hope more people will pick it up than normals.
Yeah. So I don't think that happened with Final Crisis, though.
It did really well.
I know that, but it was pretty dense. But they all are dense. My differently biased opinion would be, I think, as a sort of comic book reader who wants to have an idea about history of comics, place and things, like I think you need to read Crisis on Infinite Earths as a piece of comic book literature that is an important part of the canon. It started a lot of things. It presaged a lot of things. A lot of things still refer to it. It's a little dense and difficult and a little dated in its wording, basically, you know, like the sort of style of the scripting. Not bad, it's just of a different time.
It's a Marv Wolfman one.
The George Perez art is, I mean, it is Perez, right? I'm not wrong.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
That's really a thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing that needs to be witnessed. More than any of the other books we talked about, I think the most important thing is look at what this person did, because that was not very usual. That was a new thing, and sort of like bring all of this stuff together and make it really wacky, and it's over the top and it's melodramatic, and it's really fun for that if you can get in the right headspace for it. After that, you know, if you really wanted something, and Connor said this doesn't really count, and I think he's probably right, but I don't care. Identity Crisis is pretty interesting. There's been some controversy about it since that, but it's a standalone story. It is an intro of a comic book writer. You know, it made a big splash right away. The art's great. It stands on its own, and it's one of the few stories where like they take superheroes really, really seriously, but it's fine. Like, it's fun. You can sort of go with it, and it works for me, and it worked when I reread it too.
That's it? You would recommend just those two?
Yeah. I mean, like, to start with, if you're like, wow, these were great and you want more, then I think you go on from there.
I mean, I think you can – see, I don't want to even say you can skip Infinite Crisis, because I think there really is a Act 1, Act 2, Act 3 when you laid those three Crisis stories together.
I don't even remember the other two very much. So.
Infinite Crisis involves – so Crisis on Infinite Earths was that there was all these multiverses and it gets smacked into one at the end. There's just one DC universe. Infinite Crisis does the opposite. It blows the multiverse back open. It's directly tied to Crisis on Infinite Earths. Characters from that book reappear. Mm-hmm. And then Final Crisis is sort of the bookend on all of it. It's not so much the multiverse thing. It's more about Darkseid. But although there's a multiverse, Superman and stuff like that. But it's not so much about fixing the multiverse as it is stopping Darkseid. But you get the return of Barry Allen there, where he died the first one. I think all three of those books sort of weave together to tell one overarching DC Universe story throughout the decades. So if that sounds interesting to you, I would definitely recommend all three. If you just want to read the first one, read the first one, and that's fine too.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, that's where you're starting in any case.
Yeah. contact@ifanboy.com. That's where you can write it and send your email for the show. We appreciate everyone who does that. And let's do some housekeeping. First, as I mentioned before, Dreadnought Legends, number one, still available on Steam and Comixology if you want to check out the book that I edited, written by Paul Montgomery, former co-host, and David Campo, former friend of the show. It's available now on Comixology, only $1.99, $2, which is about half the cost of your normal comic. So go. We'd appreciate that if you check it out for the holidays. It would make us happy.
Then you can get over to iFanboy or to your podcast feed, and you can download my Talksplode episode, interview with Katie Cook. Of Nothing Special, of My Little Pony, of Gronk, of many, many, many wonderful drawings, Star Wars children's books, and other licensed properties on her career in cartooning, which I found very interesting. Because, you know, she's not the typical person who went to a show and met people with their samples and then did an indie comic and then wanted to come up in the mainstream system. It was a different way of going about it. And she's found a lot of success doing something that works within her style, which I think is really cool.
And the next month we have December will be the final Booksplode, the final special Splode show of the year, in which we talk about My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips.
Yes. December.
So December. Yes. That'll be the next show.
Okay.
And then let's talk about the holiday schedule. So longtime listeners know the show gets a little strange the last 6 weeks of the year. So we only have four more Pick of the Week episodes this calendar year. Pick of the Week 660 is November 18th. 661 is the Thanksgiving show, November 25th. And then two shows in December, 662 on December 2nd and 663 on December 9th. And then we take a break, and the Pick of the Week show returns on January 6th. But in that intervening time, we'll have a couple of shows. The all-media show, which we look forward to every year, will come out on December 16th. And then we'll have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse on probably December 15th, and Aquaman probably on December 23rd. And then also in that time, we'll have two hangouts for the patrons. If you're a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy, in a vision of voting and getting a superpower, you get to hang out with us once a month for an hour. We talk about nonsense. The November hangout will be on November 11th, and the December hangout will be on December 2nd. And so that's what's going on for the rest of the year. A lot of shows, but with some time off.
Yeah, but you will not be lacking. That's the point there.
There's eight shows, so it's a lot going on.
Head over to ifanboy.com.
Seven shows.
And you can count the shows and make sure that you get that right after it's all over. And then if that number is not right, you can write to us and say.
Well, eight if you count the Talksplode. So eight shows.
Yeah, sure. So that was ifanboy.com. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out on facebook.com/ifanboy or following at ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually, J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, or just C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
And if you like the show, please consider writing a review on iTunes or even just leaving a star rating. The star rating takes one click and you're done. That's for any podcast you listen to. That could be your holiday gift to that podcast, is leave them a rating on iTunes or a star review. Or reverse that, star rating and a written review. It does help people find podcasts. New shows are especially needy for those reviews and those ratings. So if you listen to a new podcast, give it a shout on iTunes or any place you listen to podcasts. It really does help them. But even better than that is to tell your friends. Word of mouth is always the best way. Once again this week, someone put out the shout for people's favorite comic podcasts, and we got mentioned a bunch of times. We do thank everyone who does that. Anytime that question comes up, we do appreciate you helping to spread the iFanboy word all around the globe.
Word.
Even in Barcelona.
Or Barcelona.
Maybe there's a bunch of Andrews. They can all hang out and do
try
really
to find
cool
a comic
stuff.
Shop. think about Crisis.
All right. That's this week's show. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Goodbye and thank you. Same game, same game.